Boom, we're on. And today's guest, we've got Vinny Bradish.
Okay, nice to meet you, James.
First of all, just want to say thanks for coming on, Vinny.
No, Connor, you're welcome.
You and your brother's got a reputation, allegedly robbing over 200 banks, vans. So, he's did a bit of time in prison. I believe your brother's doing, is it seven life sentences?
Yeah, he's doing seven or eight life sentences. Yeah.
So, yourself, mate, very colourful past.
Yeah.
So, we'll go right back to the start, though.
Okay.
Just tell me where you grew up and how it all began.
Well, I grew up in northwest London in Willesden, on Curzon Crescent, and your older brothers or the older lads and all that would be doing whatever they were doing and all that. And I remember the, one bit of the memory that sticks into me was where they broke into a lorry full of alcohol, and they had nicked all the beer and all the spirits and all that martini, I think it was, and hid it. And us little kids found some of it, you know, and started swigging bottles of it and all that. Mm-hmm. And I remember being at home that night, my mum was trying to wash me, and I was vomiting or whatever from the drink, you know. And that was the earliest I remember.
How old were you?
Probably about 10. 10 or 12 years old, something like that, yeah. I know, yeah.
How was your upbringing?
Yeah, I was happy with the upbringing, you know. There was 9 of us in the family, and we had a good upbringing, I would say, yeah. Like, it wasn't wealthy, obviously. And but we was earning money from a young age, you know, like going around, me and my two younger brothers would go out knocking on people's doors, asking them if they wanted anything up the shops, any shopping, or if they wanted their dustbin emptied or anything, you know.
Yeah,
and that's what we would do, yeah.
To get an extra bit of cash?
Anything to earn money, yeah. And you'd give all that money to our mum, and that would help to buy food for the family and stuff.
What was secondary school like for you?
Did
you go much?
Yeah, I went until I was old enough to play truant, you know. And then because I never liked school from the time I went in there, even in the infants, I never liked it. It wasn't for me, you know. And I never liked it from the junior school, like right up to secondary school. I couldn't stand school.
What age did you start getting into trouble?
Probably when I was about 15, 16. 16 years old, something like 17, yeah.
What kind of stuff were you involved in?
I think I got involved in a fight, and I ended up getting a prison sentence for that. And even before that, I think I used to do shoplifting and stuff, and I'd get arrested for shoplifting, and that would be it, you know.
Yeah. Well, so your first prison sentence, you were 16?
Oh, I was probably about 17, and I got sentenced to detention centre. I think that was for a theft and a burglary and a couple of assaults.
Yeah. What was that experience like then, first time inside?
In detention centre, it was like, well, they used to call it back in them days, a short, sharp shock. And it was like, as soon as you get off the van, you got to run full steam ahead to get into the building. But I liked all the physical exercise, you know. And so I'd been in the army cadets as well, so I knew about boxing blankets and all the regime that was in there. I was used to it, you know, so yeah. It was like home from home to me.
Did that make you worse the first time you went into detention once you came out?
No, I don't think it made me worse. That was just, it was just the way I am. I went in and I came out the exact same way.
What was your first robbery like?
The first robbery, it was good. The adrenaline was flying, you know, and I was happy with it, and it was successful.
So that's what kind of kicked you on to be involved in more stuff,
doing more robberies. Yeah.
What was your first big job?
I can't really remember the first big job. Like, even obviously on the first bank I robbed, I got about 10 grand out of it, and so that was good for me. I was happy, you know. Mm. And I thought to myself, flipping hell, I thought the robbery took less than 30 seconds and I'm out with 10 grand. I thought, I've never had 10 grand before in my life.
Was that a bank?
Yeah, it was a bank, yeah.
And how many was involved?
How many was involved in that?
Yeah.
Two of us.
Did you plan it, or was it just a kamikaze job?
No, that was just planned. That was, yeah.
Yeah. Because, obviously, you've been in the prison a few times for the bank stuff, because one of the men you was in your team, you worked with, he turned Queens against you.
That's right, yeah.
And he stuck you in for, was it 50 banks? And you get charged for?
He accused us. He said that we were responsible for about 100. He said he stole us over 100 cars. So that would be 100 offences, you know, 100 robberies or something like that.
And he turned Queens?
He turned Queens evidence, yeah, so that he would get a lesser sentence.
Yeah. Mm. So when you started carrying on with the bank jobs, how was it the adrenaline rush, or was it the money you wanted? What was the full experience?
I done it mostly for the money, you know, and sometimes, like, But even if I had some money, I would still do them. Like, if my partner in crime, if he wanted to do something, then I would go in there and back him up. And
so your partner in crime was your brother?
Yeah.
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 Just both of yous?
Yeah, both of us, yeah.
Yeah. So, when your brother's doing, is it seven life sentences?
He got about seven life sentences when he was with me, and then he's been sentenced to, I think, another concurrent life sentence in 2013. Yeah.
Your brother was he in home leaves and he was robbing banks on day release?
Yeah.
Fucking mad that.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Well, he come back out of prison. He came out of prison after 10 years, 10 or 11 years, the same as myself. And you come out and you haven't got no money. So he's gone back to what he knew best, you know?
What was your first big sentence, Vinny?
The first big sentence before these robberies.
Yeah.
I did 18 months was the longest sentence I got. 18 months, I think it was Borstal. 18 months when I just turned 21, yeah. I was a young offender or whatever they call it.
When did it start coming on top for you? When did you start being known? Because in the papers, did they call you the Dirty Dozen? Or?
Yeah, they called us the Dirty Dozen, yeah, because there was about 12 of us. And we wasn't all working together, but we all knew each other and that. When it started coming on top for us, did you say?
Yeah. You start getting recognition.
Before 2000, I was arrested in February 2000. And even for the last couple of years before that, we'd seen old Bill were following us everywhere, you know. And like helicopters, motorbikes, and in cars, and on foot. They was everywhere, so.
What was your first sentence, Ford Banks?
It was that one. That sentence I got 22 years for that. And 22 years for conspiracy to rob and 22 years for possession of firearms to run concurrent because they couldn't prove any of the single robbery, single wobblies. Wobblies. Yeah, they couldn't. So they probably couldn't convict us if they'd have done on separate charges or I might have got off with a few. So they flung them all together and it's harder for you to get out of it. It's a conspiracy charge.
Yeah. So that's what they're saying. How many banks did they convict you with then?
I got convicted of 11 robberies, I think it was, and one or two attempts.
What prison did you go to?
I went to a few different prisons. I started off in Belmarsh, in Wormwood Scrubs. Then I went from there to Belmarsh for the trial. Then when I got convicted, I was made a Cat A prisoner, and then they put me onto the high secure unit within Belmarsh, and I stayed on there for 6 months. And then I went from there to Whitemoor to Rye Hill to, can't remember where it was. Then I went to a Cat Scenic, then eventually a Cat Denic and got out. Yeah, well,
so that was 12 years out of your life sentence?
Yeah, it was about 11 years. I got out after about 10 and a half years. And when I finally got into an open prison, I went out and I had a few pints of beer. And when I came back to the prison, I was steamed up. And so they sent me back to a closed prison for about another 18 months.
Because you had a drink?
Yeah.
Was that part of your parole?
No, part of the conditions when you're getting day release, you're not supposed to drink. Mm-hmm. But I did. And so that was a backward step for me. So I done about another 18 months for that. And then I got released from HMP Wayland in Norfolk.
Have you been out ever since?
Yeah.
Were you in with your brother?
Yeah, we was in together for a good part of the sentence here and there. Sometimes we was banged up in the same cell, sometimes we were next door to each other, or we was on the same wing in the same prison and all that.
Do you look back at it, Vinny, and go, that was crazy, what you did, what you were involved in, the adrenaline, and obviously your life's quieter now, you want to speak out, you want to get books made, documentaries. Mm. What do you think when you think back on it all?
Well, sometimes you think, like some people ask, oh, do you regret it? And sometimes you might think, oh, you do, but then sometimes you're thinking, what's the point in regretting it? What's done is done, you know? It's like, it's the bad side of it. You miss your family growing up. And so that's the main thing you miss when you're inside. But that's it, you know?
How's your brother?
He's fine, yeah. He's doing a degree in criminology now, and he's got one exam paper left, and they're expecting him to do very well. A university lecturer has been in to see him and he's praising him. He's saying he's got the highest marks doing the criminology course, you know.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you see people who do crime or people think they're daft or it's crazy, but they've all got the mindset to change their life and be educated on whatever it is. It's just certain circumstances that yous chose that path.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the boy who turned Queens against you, did you know, when did you know that he was turning a snitch?
Well, he started mixing up with us in about 1995, and he didn't come with a very good name, you know. And so he was mixing up with us a lot when we used to go to the pub and all that, and he wasn't very liked, but I didn't really like him much anyhow. And but he was useful because he was able to nick the cars, you know. We wasn't able to get the cars, and so we would use him for that. And then he got involved. He was doing the robberies as well. And but we kind of suspected that he was up to no good. But the way we used to think, we used to say, well, if he is working with the old Bill, we used to say, well, how come they haven't come and nicked us? Because we've seen them following us all the time. And nothing ever happened, you know. So he goes, well, they obviously haven't got any evidence, and this, that, and the other, you know.
What was your biggest job, Vinny?
How much money we'd got. I think it was sometime when we used to rob a Thomas Cook. Like, sometime we'd get a load of money out of them. You might get 100 grand and a load of traveller's checks, and you would sell the traveller's checks as well, so that would make you another load of money, and you would get a load of foreign currency as well, you know. So
what were you doing with your money when you had all that dosh?
We would just go out and spend it and party, you know.
There's a few photos of the champagne lifestyle, you and the brother always toasting. Champagne. Was it just live fast?
Was it what?
Just live fast.
Yeah, it was, yeah. You're just living fast, robbing banks nearly every week or whatever, whenever it suited us. And just go to the gym, training during the day. Might do a couple of days' work here and there on a building site, and then that job would fall through, or for one reason or another, you'd be back at it again, you know.
What's the most jobs you've did in one day?
Just the one in the one day, you know. Yeah, that would be enough for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was the feeling like after you did a job?
It was just happiness, ain't it? You were happy. You were just saying, yeah, and you'd be laughing. You'd say, like, cheering and clapping your hands and all that stuff. So, yeah, we've done it again. And even though you've seen all the old Bill everywhere, it was just like, it just become a game, like, in the end. Like, you feel like you're outsmarting them. And we used to be saying, how come they're called a flying squad and they're everywhere and they can't catch us? Yeah. But that was that, you know.
But eventually they did.
But the thing is, with the help of Stephen Roberts, the guy that turned QE, he set my brother up to be arrested. And so my brother got arrested after Roberts set him up. And with me, I wasn't arrested doing anything. I was driving down the road with a girl that I was seeing at the time. And that was it. Armed police just ambushed the car and dragged me out of the car, gave me a bit of a hiding, and that was it.
How have you managed to keep your nose clean now and stay out?
How do I manage to stay out of the trouble now?
Yeah.
I just changed my lifestyle since I come out and all that. I got into, I suppose, when I started doing education when I was in prison, I started doing my GCSEs, English and this, that and the other, and learning about attitudes and values and this stuff that you hadn't really, even though you have your own values when you're growing up, but no one's ever put it in black and white and talking about them. You haven't sat around because I wasn't able to. At school, I wasn't able to do anything for whatever reason, I don't know. And so then, a few years into my sentence, I'd started, like, doing the education, you're reading books, and you're just picking up this book and that book, and it started making you feel like personal development stuff, like by Anthony Robbins and some other people, you know. And next when they're teaching you techniques of how to manage your emotions better, how to feel better. And sometimes you do a course in there, like when they would teach us some enhanced thinking skills courses, and I'd go on them, and when I'd come off, I used to, it was like my brain had been switched on, you know. I used to love doing them. And they're like kind of psychology based.
So you started trying to understand the mind, the way you felt, emotions, and try to rewire it and change it all.
Yeah, because I used to be saying to myself, and I'd be thinking back over the years, why was I always getting nicked? Like, I was in a police station once, and I seen my name had been scratched on the door from about 12 years before. And I was in that police station for a whole weekend. And I'm thinking, what the fuck am I still doing here again, you know? And you can't put your finger on it. Why? And it's just the way you're thinking about things.
The vicious cycle, innit?
It is. And the jobs that I was getting, like, I was working in a building industry here and there. And the jobs were never they weren't fulfilling for me, you know?
Yeah. So how do you feel walking by banks now? Do you still get
excited, I think? No, I don't bother with them, you know. Like, I wouldn't be interested in robbing them because I've done my bit and I'm not interested in them now. Now I work for my money and I'm not having to look over my shoulder every day or nothing, and with the old bill following me around as they was for years, it becomes a pain in the arse, and you don't want that pain in the arse any longer.
Do you still get any grief off them?
No.
Never?
No.
How now then, Vinny, through all your madness, all the alleged banks, how are you feeling now? You feel content? You feel happy?
Yeah, I feel great. Yeah, I never felt better.
What do you think of the prison system now?
I think it, from what I ever, I don't see nothing much of it, you know, or hear anything of it. And sometimes I hear of improvements that they've made, like just even putting phones in people's cells and all that kind of stuff. Because the prison the system, all it's a lot of what it's doing is breaking people's families up. And I know the people, the victims, they want their justice and all this kind of stuff. But so that's what the prison does mostly, is break families up. And so when that's breaking them up, if you're sending the father away to prison or whatever, then what's going to happen to that person's kids or whatever? And next one, they could be turned into crime or whatever. And they've got that connection with the police and all that kind of stuff.
How was your family when you were going through all your trouble as well? How did they treat you?
They used to come up and visit me all the time, you know, and they visit my brother Sean as well. And so we kept the family ties strong between the most of our family. Yeah.
And now you're involved in salsa dancing.
That's right, yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I was in a hostel when I got released from prison down in Cricklewood in northwest London. And I went into the Crown Moran Hotel and I accidentally overheard a Latin music being played upstairs in a dance hall. And so I went up to see what was going on, and there was Cuban salsa was playing. And I seen everyone in there smiling and happy and all that. And I asked what was going on to the girls at the desk, and they said, "Oh, this is Cuban salsa." And I said, "I have to learn it." And that was it. I never looked back.
You love it?
I love it, yeah.
How many times are you doing it?
Well, when I was living in Cricklewood, I used to go sometime three times a week, two or three times, because it's more close to central London, and now I'm on the outskirts of London, I don't go in as much. But I loved it, and like for me, it was a kind of like a lifesaver, because it's a social life without going back to the pubs where all my old mates were and all that kind of stuff.
Did you distance yourself, Vinny, when you came out of prison?
Yeah.
To help change your life?
Yeah, I don't hang around with anyone that I used to hang around with before.
Did people try and get you involved in jobs? And
no.
Nah?
Well, no. By the time I came out, nearly everyone had moved on, or some of them had moved out of the area. Some might have been locked up already.
Or dead.
And so I didn't want to go back into the pub atmosphere, because it had never been good for me. Like, all the years growing up, whenever I used to go into the pub, sometime I'd get in trouble when I come out of the pub through drink, something like fighting or smashing a shop window or doing something stupid. And I was committing crime to get money for drink, to go out drinking and all this stuff. So too much alcohol was never any good for me.
That sends you over the edge, drinking?
Yeah, well, I'm a happy person when I'm drinking, but I would end up drinking too much and I wouldn't go to work the next day if I had a job. And then so then I'm back to where I was, no job, and I was fucking earlier, sick to death of it, you're back where you started. And so you could never get ahead, you know.
Did you ever do a job drunk?
I did have a few drinks one day before doing a job, yeah.
How was that experience?
Yeah, it was good crack, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it, yeah.
Because I know I've had Noel Razor Smith on. I've had Noel Razor Smith on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who's another notorious bank robber.
Yeah, I know, he's a good friend of mine.
And you're good friends and all.
Yeah.
Is that because of the relation of the work you used to do?
Yeah, well, me and Noel, we both used to go to the same club years ago when I was about 16, 15, and I liked rock and roll music and the dancing and all that. And Noel used to go to the same club. I never met him at the time. I used to see him, but I didn't know him. He was from South London, I was from North West.
Yeah, Noel's got a great story, a great guy. Yeah. He changed his life also.
Yeah, of course, And I met Noel in the prison, and when he showed me some pictures up on his wall, and I was saying, bloody hell, I knew this person. I knew that he was into the rock and roll scene, and then we just bonded from there, you know?
Yeah. So, is there any banks that you ever did, or any jobs that you ever did that sticks out to you, that you remember?
Any jobs that I had done that stuck out to me? Some of them that was good, yeah. Some of them that I liked. Yeah, I would like sometimes robbing a security van and getting away with it. Obviously, it was good fun at the time, you know? no one got injured because we wasn't interested in injuring people. We just wanted the money.
Did you use guns
then? Yeah, we would use guns, yeah.
Yeah. What was the whole experience like then from your first job to your last job? Is it still the same? Was it still the same buzz from the first to the last, or was it just... It might sound weird, but was it getting boring, the same shit day in, day out?
Yeah, I would get... I suppose towards the end of it in 2000, you would still kind of get the same kind of buzz, but when I was thinking of it, I was thinking, we're not earning enough money, and that was it, you know, so I was getting a bit bored of it.
How was your experience when you were doing your life sentence?
22 years I was doing.
Yeah.
How was it? Sometimes it was good, sometimes it was bad, sad, you know, like the sad parts are when you're missing your family, obviously, but I was there with my brother, and once you got a few decent people around you, and then you would have a good crack with them, go to the gym with them, training with them, cooking with them, and that was fine, you know.
So what's the plans for you now, Vinny, for moving on from everything, from the life you've been involved in, to now, to kick on and really do something with your life that you want to do?
Well, what I'm doing now, I do the carpentry and refurbishing work and decorating and all that, but I've also got into hypnotherapy. And over a year ago, I qualified as a hypnotherapist.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, I got a diploma in hypnotherapy and psychotherapy. And I've done a couple of other hypnotherapy courses, rapid induction courses as well, because I want to do that, you know.
What about stuff like NLP?
Yeah, I done an NLP course with Dr. Bandler, who's the co-founder of NLP.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I done a course with him. So I'm a licensed NLP practitioner.
Because they're all together, like Bandler.
Yeah. When I done the NLP course, I was afraid kind of going for the course because I thought, it's beyond me. I thought, everyone that's going to be doing the course is going to be so well educated. And I thought, I'm just a working class kid. And I had that kind of mindset. And I went on the course and I was talking to a fellow next to me and I asked him, what do you know about NLP? I knew a bit about it because I'd read a few books. Mm-hmm. But this guy never knew nothing. And so I thought, fucking hell. I thought everyone here was going to know all about the course, but it was wrong, you know. So it was a limiting belief. And that was holding me back that I was having. I didn't think I could achieve this. I didn't think I could achieve that. Mm-hmm. And so I'd done that course for a week. And I felt good that I'd done it. And from then, that springboarded me on to taking action to becoming a hypnotherapist, is what I wanted to get into hypnotherapy,
It's good that you've read that kind of stuff to understand that you can rewire your brain, that
you can,
you're
definitely
in control of your life.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You control your feelings and emotions.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because they said, what you think about, you become.
Yeah, exactly.
And when me and my brother Sean was out here, all we was thinking about was robbing banks. We didn't intend to become Britain's number one notorious robbers or anything like that. We were just robbing banks.
Yeah.
That was all we thought about.
So you're... Do you ever speak in schools or anything, Vinny?
No, I've never spoken
in
any schools.
Would you like to start doing stuff like that?
If there was the opportunity and if it was for a good cause and that, then I would consider it.
Yeah, listen, you've been through the wars. You've got the experience. You've spent life in prison.
Yeah.
But the fact is that you've educating yourself, not always saying knowledge is power. And the brain will only repeat what it knows. And if that's all you knew, then robbing banks, that cycle is always only going to repeat itself. When you start doing new things, start learning about the brain, start educating yourself, then you can start choosing, wait a minute, I don't need to choose that life.
Exactly.
I can do other shit.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a man I watch and always mention him called Joe Dispenza.
I watch him quite a bit.
Powerful stuff. It's all about the mindset. How the neurons in the brain changing the neural pathways.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what age you are, you can fucking change.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean? You can choose.
I got into watching Les Brown, motivational speaker, and Eric Thomas.
Yeah.
And I was watching them when I first got out of the NIC. And I was saying, wow, this is amazing, you know? Mm. And from going on some personal development weekends, with a guy named Elliot Kay, he was also known as the coach with the hat. And I went to a free weekend when he was doing it at a Hilton Hotel in London, and he'd done a personal development thing for about 100 people. And when I seen what was going on, and I thought, this is it. Now I'm around like-minded people, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was all good for me, and that's helped me to... All that is a part and parcel what helped me to keep on the straight and narrow.
Les Brown used to say all the time, people's opinion of you doesn't have to be a reality.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, he was classed as... basically a retard, for want of a better word. That's what he was called at school. And he was born on an abandoned building on the floor from a single mum. And now he's a motivational speaker worth millions.
Yeah.
And he's, like he says, if he can do it, like anyone can do it.
It's just about the belief, though.
Yeah, of course it is.
It's about the belief.
Yeah.
So you've got that mindset now. You've got the motivational mindset. The spirit. It's kind of spiritual as well, Vinny.
Yeah.
Where you go, right, I'm changing now. So You've obviously believed in a law of attraction, you mentioned.
Yeah,
there.
I have, yeah. I've read that book as well, yeah, and seen the videos, yeah.
Yeah. So what's your goals for the future then? What's your plans?
My plans are, what I want to do long term is to become like a successful hypnotherapist, mm-hmm. and helping people to change their beliefs and their, like, and their minds, their attitudes or whatever. And if I could help people even to staying away from crime or whatever, even though I think maybe it's a long shot, but... Oh yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah, yeah. And with the book that my friend Noel is working on, mm-hmm. he's working on a book about my life or and a part of the lifestyle that I lived with my brother Sean. So he's working on that book, and we've got another book coming out as well. That, there's a chapter about my life in that called The Green Bloods, which Noel Smith and Andy Nolan are working on.
Okay.
And all that kind of stuff is, if there's money comes in from that, it's going to help me to achieve more of my goals, you know.
Yeah.
And if I can help anyone else to change their life around, then it's good satisfaction for me, you know.
Definitely, and you've got to first of all believe it. Do you know what I mean? That anything can be done.
Of course,
and it's good that you're trying to get your books out, because it'll come in legit money, and then this is when you can start doing other things, because your story they can start making into maybe a documentary, a film, new books.
It's all about opportunity and opens doors.
I
believe it can happen. Like I said, we didn't plan on being Britain's number one robbers, armed robbers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we were successful, and we were doing it for so long. And so if we can become Britain's number one robbers, what else can you become number one at?
Yeah.
It's just a matter of keeping at it.
Yeah. Well, it's the same as drug dealers, entrepreneurs. They're selling a product.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it's drugs. They could go and sell socks, microwaves. It's a product.
Of course
They've got
is.
That entrepreneurial skills.
They have.
Do you know what I mean?
And the thing is, and if the people didn't want the drugs, there wouldn't be no job for them.
Yeah.
So why are they taking the drugs?
Mm-hmm. I believe if you're number one at something, you can be number one at something else.
Yeah, of course you can.
Where your focus goes, your energy flows.
Exactly, that's right.
What do you think for people who are watching, who are maybe thinking going down that route of crime, robberies, selling drugs, what advice would you give for them?
Well, I'd say it's not worth it, because you're getting the money. You'd be getting the money quick. But what do you... I don't know, everyone might not spend all their money on negative lifestyle or whatever, but it's bad money anyway at the end of the day. It's what you're going to do with it. And what I was always told, what you get easy, what comes easy goes easy, and what you get bad goes bad. And so nothing really any good ever came out of the money that we stole, and we stole a fortune, you know.
Did a lot of, how much do you think through the years you've had?
Probably over £1 million, maybe more, maybe one and a half to 2 million, I don't know.
How did people treat you there then?
What do you mean, which
type of people did they want to be around you, because what you were doing, because you had the money? You get the leeches, you know that yourself. When you're doing good, you'll get the leeches, but as soon as that disappears, as soon as you're in prison, you don't fucking hear from them.
Yeah, you don't hear from the people when you're in prison. But I never expected to hear from the people when I was in prison. I didn't rely on them. I had my brother, my younger brother Liam, and that was enough. Him and my sister Maggie helped us a lot. And but what can you do, you know? That's the way it goes.
It's all part and parcel of it. And I always
it's
say everybody,
parcel.
No matter the past you've got to thank it, because it's made you who you are today. And if as long as you utilise it from your mistakes to then try and help others, to then become a better person.
Exactly, yeah.
And because in hindsight, the past is a great thing, and people say, oh, do you regret that? You can't regret anything.
As long as you
learn from your mistakes to try and... then you must try and utilise it to help others, that they don't go down the same route. Because everything, whether you're robbing banks, remember the people in those banks as well, they're going to receive that trauma. Some of them still have that trauma now, that effect that has on them. But as long as you can help change and become a better person, that's all you can work on.
Exactly.
The only person you should become better in is the person you were yesterday, I believe.
Yeah. You've got to try and make a role model for yourself. My son is now 22 years old. And I wouldn't want him going down the same footsteps or getting in the same trouble that I did as I was growing up.
Yeah. Your kids are a reflection of you. So they'll follow in your footsteps. Doesn't matter what you tell them, they'll follow what you do.
Yeah, of course. What they see, it's not what they hear, I think, even though they might hear it. But when they see you actually living a different lifestyle and doing then they copy that.
Yeah.
And like you, so that's how you become a role model, ain't it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And listen, for changing your life and... try to educate yourself and doing the NLP stuff and the hypnotherapy. It takes guts, because the people who look into that life, people start thinking, what's he doing that for? They don't understand that.
There's
not a lot of people understand it, so it becomes a lonely journey as well. You tend to see you're doing all this on your own.
doing what, like, changing your life, lifestyle. Yeah, of course, and it is like you're on your own. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, you feel like you're on your own and you're thinking, fuck this, but what can you do? You just got to keep on going, you know?
Yeah.
I would like to add also, like, even the South of Scene, and that when I was in the hostel was paying for me. They pay for a prisoner, ex-prisoner, while they're in the hostel. They pay for you to do purposeful activities in the community. And their purposeful activities was, like, they would pay for you to go to the gym and a couple of other things. And but I said to him, I goes, I'm sick to death of going to the gym. I goes, I've been in a gym in the Nick for the last 12 years nearly. I goes, I don't want to go in another bloody gym. I would go in now and then, but when I found the salsa scene, I goes, I wanted money to pay for that. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the money. And so they started funding that £10 for a couple of lessons. And I started doing it with Cuban Vibes down in Cricklewood. I'd like to mention them because they helped me a lot. Even when I didn't have the money, and the hostel had stopped paying for the lessons and I wasn't working, people at Cuban Vibes, they let me keep going for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So respect to them for that.
Yeah. So you're in a good place, Vinny, and it's good to see, no matter what you've been through, brother. We'll leave the links on the bio for maybe your social media if anybody wants for you to go and do talks at schools, documentaries, books. Get involved in Vinny. It's a great story, and thanks to the lads for setting it up today as well. So for coming on today, Vinny, it's been an absolute pleasure, brother.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Good luck for the future.
Okay, thanks a lot, mate.
Yeah, cheers. You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.